Mason Payne here, live from the MVP Studios in Chicago, and thank you for tuning in. Invin Global Esports reporter Nick Geraci joins me to give his thoughts about League of Legends Season 10, the new Cloud 9, and how some esports teams are currently faring this season. Thanks for joining me, Nick.
It's really good to be back. Thank you for having me.
So I have to ask, what do you think of Season 10 so far?
It's been a lot of fun. I think there's a lot of kinks that still need to be worked out. I think most of the problems stem from the specific new champion releases themselves. Like, I feel like the game balance overall is good and all of that, but picks Senna before her most recent nerf and Aphelios, just very, very strong, overtuned kits, has kind of made the game harder to balance. In the past, when they've, you know, introduced big preseason changes, which is normal for League of Legends, there also haven't been champion releases that define the meta. We might have a new champion, we might have, like, Gnar here, you know, Rek'Sai there, but Aphelios and Senna immediately became two of the best champions in the game, two of the best AD carries in the game specifically for the last few patches. So I think the changes overall are good, but there are definitely some kinks that don't need to be worked out.
I'm curious about your experience in solo queue, because I usually just play by myself when I'm playing League of Legends, and it's becoming so difficult now to get a good solo game going. Like, it really feels like Riot is making this game to, like, you have to have at least three people or you're just going to fail. What do you think? Am I looking at this wrong?
No, I think that you have some validity there for sure. I think that stems from right now. Again, this is one of the things where I said about working out the kinks, where they're trying to figure this out now. In Season 10 so far, the game has been incredibly snowball-focused, like even more than it was. Season 9 was already very snowball-focused in terms of early game advantages, but even more so now, and how the dragons stack up into the soul, and the first dragon or using the Rift Herald, because now there's two that spawn, can dictate so much the early pace of the game, and that can just mean so much more now. So in 10.3, and then even more so in 10.4, they've been trying to adjust so the game can be a little more scaling-wise. But right now, a thing that happens a lot, not all the time, mind you, but more, I think more frequently than previous seasons, at least in, like, the average lower ELOs, is that you have very, like, one-sided games where it's either, like, a total stomp or you get stomped. And I think that's what they're trying to avoid, where games can be a little bit more competitive. I do think the changes that they made in 10.4 specifically do help that, but I do agree with you, there's still a problem where, like, it's kind of like, it's hard to have a good quality solo game because it's like, moment like any sort of dam breaks whatsoever, the game can be very, very easily won if people know what they're doing. You know, one kill in top lane, orchestrated well by a jungler, like with a gank, can lead to a Rift Herald, can lead to a first tower, and boom, like that's a big gold lead right there. With how individually focused the game is and how much those early objectives matter. The game's so objective focused that, you know, then you have to fight those. You can't give them up like you used to be able to in certain metas seasons past. So it is a lot easier, I think, for the game to snowball out of control because the losing team does have to contest more in the early game than before, where it's like, oh, we fell behind, let's just try to scale up. That's a less viable option than it used to be.
Well, not just that. You also see champions that usually aren't in top lane. They're in top lane. And then you see champions that shouldn't be in AD, but here they are and as ADC, and you have a support. And it's like, Orianna, you're not supposed to be support. And it ends up being, it's viable, but it's trolly a little bit when you're not on a team and you can communicate, because I don't know what you're doing in a solo queue game, versus if we're on a team, if we're in a team and we're all on Ventrilo, we're sitting there on Discord, some kind of, you know, team speak. But in this case, it just feels like they need to really focus on what champions should go where, because making everybody everything, it feels like a mess right now.
I think that increased flexibility and roles, it is definitely, there's been a versatility creep. Right, we see more flex picks, even at the top level of competitive play now. There's a lot more flex picks, a lot more champions that can go in multiple roles. It's only February right now. We've already seen Ornn played competitively across the world this season in all five roles, for example, right? Like, that was almost unprecedented back in the day. So I do agree with you that there are some problematic things. But on one hand, it's very nice because it makes these things, like, viable in the way of, like, oh, wow, that shouldn't, like, work, but it does because of this. The problem is people are like, oh, I can play a mage bot lane instead of an AD carry, right? And objectively, there's nothing wrong with that. However, part of that flexibility, you know, career power comes career responsibility, you need to be able to identify, even in solo queue, is this the right pick for my team comp? Like, if my team already has an Elise jungle and, like, a Ryze mid and a, I don't know, like a Vladimir top, that's a lot of magic damage. Maybe I should just play a marksman instead of a mage bot lane. Does that mean that mage bot lanes are bad? Absolutely not. But the thing about this flexibility thing is it made people think they can just take whatever they want, whenever. And the important thing about versatility within roles is that it still matters in compositions. If you look at these professional teams playing this wacky stuff, it makes sense in the context of the other champions you're picking. And that's why it works, not just because they're picking whatever they want.
That's so true. You know what? The last time we spoke, it was after Worlds. And now that it's a new season, what do you think of the team so far? I'm completely shocked about Cloud9. I'm going to lay it out there right now.
I think we talked about skepticism around Cloud9 and how I felt that they could probably be fine. I did not think they would be this good. I thought that the team was going to be relatively the same as last year with potentially higher upside or potentially a higher downside. So far, they've looked like arguably the best Cloud9 in the history of League of Legends. Small sample size, but in terms of the actual form, the stats, it all backs it up. It's absolutely ridiculous. Another part of it, at least if we're talking about LCS, is that the other teams are kind of a shit show, to excuse my language. Like, some teams are starting to get it together in a bit better of a way. FlyQuest, talking about LCS teams, has an idea of their identity, and their mid laner, Power of Evil, is playing out of his mind. But overall, it's like Cloud9 is definitely a good team. They're the best team North America has. But we don't know what that means in the grand scheme of the context of the international landscape, competitively speaking, because North America has proven itself to be the weakest of the four major regions, behind Europe, China, and Korea, whatever order you have them in. They're definitely in last. And how much of this is Cloud9 is such a good team, or how much of it is these teams are playing suck and just roll over? And we won't know that until, you know, MSI. That's why the tournament is so important, even though the spring split no longer has circuit points. But I am happy with Cloud9. I don't believe that they're, like, just a bad team that's smurfing in an A. I do think they're a good team. I just don't know how good. As far as the rest of the teams, if we're talking strictly in North America, I don't have a ton of hope. I think that FlyQuest is a good team domestically, but if we're talking about international-level teams that could, like, compete against, like, a top European team or even a top Korean team right now, Cloud9 is the only team I would send out from North America.
You're right about that. How many times have I heard that, what is it, Diamond, North America Diamond is, like, Bronze Korea? So.
Yeah, and that's the thing, too, is, like, that's still, like, even as, like, our competitive landscape gets better, the solo queue is still a problem.
Yeah.
Players still talk about it. Like, I was interviewing Sven from Cloud9 recently. He's had an incredible split. He didn't die for, like, the first five games he played. But he even said, he's like, there are certain things that I just can't, that I practice in the scrims, that even if I take that champion into solo queue or in that matchup, there's sometimes I simply cannot practice that because I'm not going to be exploited enough to practice the right thing because I'm significantly better than everyone. And while it does sound cocky, for one thing, that dude is really freaking good. And another thing is that he plays an incredible amount of solo queue. He averages 8 to 10 games a night with Vulcan, his duo partner, after their scrim blocks. And that's why they're such a good team. Their work ethic is unmatched, I think, in the LCS right now. And another part of that is that, like, with people doing that, the overall quality of solo queue has improved. For example, Zen, Ruin, Closer, and somebody else, we've actually had more LCS pros take the rank one solo queue spot so far this season than all of last season. That's a good thing. That means that pros are taking solo queue more seriously, but there's still a significant problem in overall that the North American solo queue ecosystem, no matter how good the North American teams get or the infrastructure gets, still an issue. And anyone who says it's not, like, all you have to do is look at the players who come here and do well from other regions and ask them about it. And, you know, part of it is, like, people, maybe there's less player base, less top players trying to do better, but also it's the ping differential, right? Like, every other region, their server is near them. We play LCS over in Los Angeles and Riot servers in Chicago. And playing Lee Sin on 10 ping compared to 80 ping or even 70 ping is a big difference.
You're right about that. I don't think I go any lower than 16 ping any game.
Yeah, if I have 60, I'm praising Jesus, honestly. Like, it's a rarity. And you know, for me, for, you know, you and me, like, we work in League of Legends games, esports, and whatever, may have a slight effect on, like, us playing, you know, like, recreationally in our own time. But for guys like Broxah, who just got here, joined Team Liquid, had to join late because of a visa issue, and has to jump in. He's like, practicing Lee Sin is harder in this country. He told me that. It just is, because of the ping differential. And those mechanically intensive champions at the top level, like Lee Sin, those big playmaking champions, that makes all the difference.
What do you think of Evil Geniuses? Since half that team was the old Cloud9 roster. I mean, they're not doing well, but I didn't think they would do this poorly.
I am so glad you asked about Evil Geniuses. I've had so many thoughts about this team because, objectively, I want to love this team.
Yes.
But I thought it was weird that everyone was immediately rating them as a top two or top three team simply off of talent on their roster alone. Yes, they have 3/5 of the Cloud9 roster. That has shown to be very good. In fact, I think, yes, Kumo was mainly an academy, but I think he's done fine. I don't think he's the problem with the team at all. My thing is that while the players are good, I feel like Evil Geniuses has the least robust support staff in the league, at least as far as I know in terms of public staffing. All I sure there's other people working with the team, but, you know, and this does take time to build up, but, like, by comparison, Cloud9 support staff has, you know, is the double digits at this point. And there's a standard, so again, like, EG, New Org hasn't been in the LCS in over a half decade, so cutting some slack there, but I guess for me is that I didn't expect them to, I guess I expected this kind of start from them, is what I'm saying. I don't think they're a bad team, but I think that while you do have familiarity with Insurance Garen and Zazel and Kuma, I talked about how he feels he plays better when he's able to play off Svensk Garen because of how good Svensk Garen is. If you look at the other two pieces in the carry roles, that's where you see issues. Not individually, mind you, but Jizuke is a European mid laner. He had a rough year last year, but I think he's still fine individually. But he's an incredibly aggressive player. He doesn't exactly win lane super hard in the way that you expect Froggen or Bjergsen to, but you put him on a playmaker, and he's going to be able to make things happen around the map. His Echo is legendary. His LeBlanc is great. He's even pulled out the Fizz, which has been very, very fun for me when he's done that in the past on Vitality. Then you look at Bang, and he's more of a, you know, scaling, you know, go even in lane, carry hard on a caster type of carry player. If we look at 100 Thieves, where Bang struggled last year, it's the exact same problem. Zazel is, in my opinion, a cleaner, younger version of Aphromoo in terms of how he plays. And so there are clear stylistic differentials with a very controlled, paced Evil Geniuses, and then an aggressive mid laner. And while Sinscaring can make things happen around the map, they're not always playing to the strengths that they should have intrinsically. Instead, they're just kind of, this is objectively how we should play without recognizing some of these players' very, very clear, defined styles. And so I think you have a problem of players playing different types of League of Legends within the same game. Sometimes Bang is all by himself, and then Jizuke is all by himself. And while there's a lot of talent on this roster, I can't help but feel that they were a little short-sighted on how they organized it and how they expected it to just be good. There's a lot of synergy that needs to be formed here, and it's not happening in the way that, you know, that it needs to. And that's why we're seeing more of a lackluster performance, despite the names in the roster being more inspiring than that initially.
You know, I had a look up Jizuke and Bang, and I watched some of their interviews, and they both have some really thick accents. They speak English, they do it well, but I just can't imagine that when you're in a crunch and you're just shouting out stuff, I think I would get confused and kind of like frazzled, like, wait, do I go in? Do I not go in? And they're so aggressive. It's like, okay, do I follow? And it kind of feels like everything collapses because of that.
Yeah, I think my two trademark plays for Evil Geniuses, and again, this is not me blaming the individual players. I actually think Bang is having his best individual split since coming to NA. I think he's playing better individually than he did on 100 Thieves all of last year. But it's a classic thing where we see Bang go for what he thinks is the right play, and objectively it might even be. But if the other team has a different idea, he still kind of seems to follow through with it, and then he's doing the right play, but he's doing it by himself and then dying. And that doesn't work, even if it's objectively the right play, right? I'm not even saying he's trying to do that on purpose. I'm saying that he may have the right idea, but the rest of the team's on a different page. Or, you know, the other classic is that, you know, the rest of the team is on a team-fighting composition. Jizuke is on LeBlanc, and he goes in for a kill too early with not protection and support, because the only other team he's played with his entire career as a professional player is Vitality, who was known for kind of being like a worse version of G2 in the sense of, like, they weren't as good ever, but they played wacky stuff, and they played aggressively, and they dove, and they didn't give a damn about how much blood was shed. And that just doesn't fit into the identity of Evil Geniuses. So this team is not a matter of the individuals at all. It's a matter of getting these guys on the same page and having them play the game in a way that's actually cohesive, because we've already seen this. Like, look around the LCS. Even the worst team in the league has one or two big names that you could count on to carry a game here and there. So it's about how you can utilize those players within your team overall. That's what matters, and that's where they're failing.
Do you think that they'll come back, that they'll ever get on the same page within this season, or we're just going to have to see it next year?
I think it's entirely, and this is why I pointed towards the supporting staff thing. Like, I think the players have the potential to. Like, it's worked before with these types of styles and differences, but the team, the organization has to support and facilitate that type of interaction, right? And here's another thing. It really can't, in my opinion, be a perfect marriage of all ideals, because at the end of the day, you purchased a core from Cloud9. At some point, you're going to have to say, well, since Garen and Zazel are who make up the core, and Kumo has been playing with them for well over a year, and they are the guys who are doing the main communication. So at some point, you're going to have to find a way to make sure that Jizuke can play within that style while still doing Jizuke things when he on his big picks like Echo and LeBlanc and whatnot. And in the same way, you also have to, like, be able to win a game with Ezreal. Bang is a transcendent Ezreal player, and Evil Geniuses has not won a single Ezreal game that he's played. That's a big problem. It's really like they have to kind of pick one thing, and that means some players do have to sacrifice or put their style as secondary and kind of use that when it needs to happen. But right now, everyone in Evil Geniuses is playing their own game, and that's what it looks like.
You know, that's how I kind of felt that Cloud9 was a little bit before this new Cloud9. You had everybody playing their different type of thing, and Sneaky, I think, was really big for that. I wonder, his play style, Is that why he didn't want to go up against Sven? Because that was one of the biggest things, was that Cloud9 was giving him a chance to compete against Sven to keep his spot as ADC. And he declined it and said, I'm not going to fight for a spot where nobody wants me at. But then I can't help but to see how powerful Sven is. Did he already see that and just didn't want to try?
I don't think it was that. I mean, Sven's been transcended, don't get me wrong. But Sven on TSM, those were not his best seasons. He wasn't bad, but he was closer to where Sneaky was, whereas now he's working otherworldly, right? And I think that the main thing, it's two factors. One, there's a huge difference between having a guy who's playing Academy below you, who's LCS ready, who might get a start over you if you're struggling a lot, and having a guy who's sharing a spot with you, sixth man. He's just looking at his watch, waiting for you to screw up in a scrim so that he can take your spot. That's a very different type of dynamic. So that's one. Two, I think that Sneaky, after playing with the team for seven full seasons of his career, gave him the world championship every single time. And also, I think that his summer performance, the summer split, was not his best split ever. I think the slump, his demise, was greatly exaggerated. I think he was just over it. He's like, I've proven a lot. I've reached seven world championships in 7 years. You're going to make me fight for my spot with some other guys? Screw that. And I don't really blame him.
Is it true that Sneaky is part owner of C9? I was a little blown away by that.
I'm going to say is and was the case because, yes, he did have equity stake. However, while there has not been anything public about it, I would assume since he has, like, formally severed ties with C9, like, it's not, like, a bad blood thing, but, like, he's streaming out, right, and he's independent. It's my understanding that, you know, nothing's been confirmed, but I would assume he's been bought out of that. That being said, there's been no public confirmation of that whatsoever.
Yeah, I had a feeling about that because he changed all of his handles, everything.
Yeah, no, like, he's fully independent with them, like, amicable separation, but it's not like, who the fuck, he might stream as a Cloud9 streamer if he isn't playing competitively, and he isn't playing competitively, but he's streaming as himself. Like, he's not C9 Sneaky anymore in any capacity.
Well, yeah, but if I was part owner, I would be putting that everywhere. I'd be like, yeah, I'm owner of C9, and I don't care if I'm not playing anymore. I'm C9 Sneaky.
What I'd have to guess, is that, like, he was bought out and severed ties because, I haven't spoken about this, but I know for a fact that he feels that his criticism itself in the summer split, you know, the last 6 months or so, was valid but overblown. He, like, agrees with some of the criticisms, but he feels like they were, like, very much, like, made to be bigger than they were, and that a lot of things that were more of a team-wide issue were kind of forced onto him. And I think after having the most successful international career of any North American player, like, undisputedly so far, I think he felt disrespected. That means more than, I mean, maybe it doesn't, but that means more to him than, like, 1% equity in the company. He may just want to sever ties. And, you know, it, again, not confirmed, but there were rumors that Dignitas was trying to get him in the offseason and it didn't work out. So maybe he wants to keep himself available to potentially play for another team in summer split. Who knows?
Well, you know, besides Sneaky, there are a bunch of other people who actually are co-owner. Faker, he's now a part owner of T1, yeah, which I am like, whoa. And then Bjergsen's also, he's owner of TSM. So it's like, man, how come these guys are, like, getting the ownership of some of these teams? And what kind of confuses me is that these teams also aren't just exclusive to League of Legends. They may have an Overwatch team, or they may have a Counter-Strike team, or just other esport games. But it's like, why specifically LOL do they, like, let these dudes be part owner?
I think because right now League of Legends has yielded the most return on investment in esports terms. It kind of makes sense. Like, yes, Fortnite has bigger prize money, but we're talking just, like, standard salaries, like, leagues. Like, League of Legends is number one, right? So the next step into that is, okay, well, what's better than another couple $100,000 equity, long-term investment in the brand, right? Bjergsen, I said, I don't know how those negotiations went, but I know he's a big competitor, and I know that TSM missed Worlds the last 2 years, and maybe they wanted to sweeten the pot on his bank. As far as Faker, I think Faker's been synonymous with T1 for a while. He's even said earlier interviews over the last few years that, you know, maybe I'll go somewhere, maybe I'll play in China sometime. Like, so I don't think it'd be out of the question. You know, I mean, we saw Como leave after, like, 8 years of coaching, so I think T1 was interested in making sure he was locked up, and his brand presence is just unmatched. That's the thing, too. It's like, he's not just big in Korea. Like, he transcends. Like, people call him the Michael Jordan of League of Legends, not because he's the best. He is the best, but that's not why. It's because, like, you can put the Faker interview on YouTube, and it will do equally well with, like, Korean fans, European fans, North American fans. He's everywhere, right? But even if there's a player who's just as good as Faker, or even just as popular as Faker in Korea, they won't necessarily have that same level of reach, that same level of legacy to their name. So I think that's a big thing, especially when you consider that SK Telecom T1 merged with Comcast Spectacor last year. to become T1 Esports, which is going to be, I think, kind of their global expansion brand project, right? And it's important to notate that Faker's equity is not in SK Telecom T1, it is in T1 Esports, which is the parent company, the globalized parent company. So I think that tells you everything you need to know about why they did that.
Yeah, I mean, this guy, everybody says he's the GOAT, and I have to say, he is. He can take anything mid lane, and he can make that gold.
Yeah, so I still go back and watch some of his clips from the past when he's able to pull out Riven mid at any point in time, even though Riven mid has never, ever been a thing. And he's undefeated on his career. It's only 4 games, but he's pulled it out across multiple years. He's something else. And I think that level of, like, incredible play, like, even if SKT isn't at their best right now, even though they lost G2, Faker's stock still, like, cannot be underestimated, especially when T1 Esports rebrand as a whole is a globalization effort of SK Telecom's dominance in Korea. And so it makes all the more sense to attach Faker to that in as many ways as possible.
You're not going to want to miss part 2 of my interview with Invin Global's Nick Geraci as we speak about Set and what characters should be removed or reworked to help with the balance of League of Legends.